Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. It's the first day of school in Boston and all around the state. Most kids are back in class now. And on top of math, English, and social studies, they might be running laps, playing dodgeball, or some kind of team sport. But once they get to college, most students wave goodbye to that PE requirement. In fact, these days, less than 40% of four-year higher ed schools require physical education or any kind of exercise. But in a recent Harvard Magazine article, biological sciences professor Dan Lieberman urges bringing back that phys ed requirement, and he joins us now. And it's good to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So explain this idea. Why should students at Harvard, or any college for that matter, have a physical activity requirement? What's the argument in favor of this?
Well, first of all, I think I'm glad that you said physical activity requirement versus physical education requirement.
Gotcha.
Because, you know, if we were to, you know, go into a time machine and go back 50, 60 years ago, of course, everybody would be required to be physically active in college, just as today we require physical education in high schools and in primary schools. And there's a reason for that, because there is, I think we draw a false separation maybe between the mind and the body and between the intellectual tasks of teaching our students to think and teaching them skills. But we recognized 50, 60 years ago that to do that effectively required also paying attention to their health, in particular.
Why did we move away from that, by the way? Because I'm really intrigued by that. And you point out that just, back around the time of the Vietnam War, a Harvard freshman had to complete 30 physical training hours per semester. Why do we move away from that?
Well, you know, the answers to that are kind of lost in the mists of time. And I've been sending emails to everybody on the planet to try to figure this out. I think there's a number of factors that all kind of happened together. One, of course, was there was a general dissatisfaction with any kind of requirement, let alone physical education. So physical education was probably the lowest hanging fruit, the easiest one for students to argue against. It's also expensive. It was challenging for the university to do all this. And I think also, you know, there's been this focus more and more. I mean, we see it in our own school system for secondary school and primary school of, you know, focusing on all these sort of competitive skills that students need to learn in order to thrive in the workforce. It used to be in the old days, you know, you got a degree from, you know, an elite university and you'd go off and waltz into whatever job you wanted.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there's less time for that kind of, you know, having fun in college, perhaps. People, at least students, perceive that. And they really want to focus more on the skills that they went there to learn. And so physical education falls by the wayside.
Sure, it falls by the wayside. In your article, you mentioned that requiring some physical activity might be perceived as being a little coercive.
Well, it is.
So what about this? Okay, so yeah, what about that argument? So isn't that an argument against it?
Well, it is. I mean, I don't like coercion any more than anybody else does. I have no idea how this is going to happen or if it's going to happen. And yeah. I hope if we do it, it'll be as uncoercive as possible. But if you think about it, universities are very coercive places. I mean, people are coming. It's a commitment contract, right? People are paying a lot of money to come to various universities and have professors like me or my colleagues make up requirements. We literally sit in department meetings and come up with new ones all the time. And we do that, and the students accept that because they have some confidence that those requirements have some benefit. And so the question we really have to ask ourselves is, could some kind of requirement or maybe can be a carrot rather than a stick, you know, some kind of certificate, would that be a benefit to everybody? And I think most people, when you ask them, agree that it would. The question really is the trade-offs, right? Because, there's a trade-off in terms of, as you say, coercion, but also there's people perceive other trade-offs, such as time or embarrassment or, you know, there's a, you know, one concern today, which probably wasn't so much on the minds of people back in the before the 1970s, is the issue of body shaming and the fact that many people are uncomfortable with physical activity. And I think we have to, if we're going to do it today, we have to do it in a much more mindful, thoughtful, appropriate way to handle the needs of and abilities and talents of a much, much more diverse group of students.
Well, as we mentioned, about 40% of colleges still have this kind of requirement. How does some of those work? Or how would you like to see this work? What would be an ideal system in your view?
Well, I mean, I think for, you know, liberal arts colleges, places like Harvard or BU and, you know, many of the other universities in, say, in the Boston area, I find it hard to imagine that we would add a physical education requirement that would take away credit hours. You know, there are already so many challenges to for students to fill those credit hours appropriately in the first place. I would, the way, if I were, you know, the czar and I could just do it the way I wanted to, I would fall back on the recommendations of the U.S. Surgeon General and the American College of Sports Medicine and the American Heart Association and various other organizations that have looked carefully at a wide range of data that would show that, you know, a minimum of 150 minutes a week is what most people agree is sort of a good baseline for everybody. And that's really five times a week for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way I would do it is to have students agree that or commit to, that they would try every week to get in 150 minutes. And they could do it however they wanted. If they wanted to be on an intramural team or just walk around the river or climb stairs or go to the gym or do yoga.
But this would be sort of an honor system, it sounds.
That's how I would do it.
Yeah.
And then students who did report that on a regular basis, we could reward them and give them, say, a certificate of fitness at the end of their 4 years in college, which, you know, they could put on their transcript as a kind of a bonus or an incentive. That's how I would do it. But obviously, many universities still retain, you know, as you said, 40%, a much more traditional system, which is an actual requirement where they have to do a certain number of hours and often fulfill a certain number of credit hours. And that's also obviously on the table. That's not how I would do it. But
Many, many years ago, I won't say precisely how many, I spent a year at the University of Oregon, and they still had a phys ed requirement. And you know how I satisfied it one semester? Parachute jumping. True story.
Well, it probably got your heart rate up.
I learned to jump out of airplanes with a vintage World War II parachute strapped behind my back. It was very exciting. But for that, I can't remember if it was one credit or two credits. Anyway.
Well, that's terrific. Well, I mean, the evidence shows that, you know, when we really want to get the most benefit, right, for our students is some mix of aerobic and strength training.
Yeah.
You know, aerobic exercise is really the fundamental, right? You know, getting your heart rate up for a sustained period of time, you know, on a regular basis is so fundamental to not just your physical health, for example, preventing heart disease, but also your mental health. You stimulate, various kinds of factors in the brain called brain-derived neurotrophic growth factors, serotonin, dopamine. All of these things affect mood and help students deal with not just students, professors as well, with anxiety and depression and all, you know, it's just a huge range of mental health issues which are, you know, present on campus just as they are in the rest of the world.
I want to ask you about this. Our colleague Carrie Goldberg, who writes our Common Health blog and who we're going to be hearing from in just a bit, spoke to a Harvard sophomore, Molly Levins, about this idea. She said she liked it, but she said this.
I also know that there'd be a lot of backlash. It'd be very controversial, so I don't know if it would ever... don't know if it would ever go through, but I personally think it's a great idea, but like I just came from the gym.
So I don't know Molly Levins, but here's what her actuality sort of brings up in my mind. She says, you know, I don't know if it would go through, but I just came from the gym. And so here's my sort of pushback to you. Isn't college the moment when we sort of assume that kids have crossed that line and become adults, and now it's up to them to make a whole series of decisions that they have to take responsibility for? And that might mean making decisions that might not be the best things for them, but they have to sort of live with that. They're adults now.
I completely agree. I mean, that's why, again, I'm not pushing for a physical ed requirement,
right,
but rather some kind of commitment. And if students don't want to do it, that's fine. I mean, you know, for example, when I teach a course, I have a syllabus and there are, you know, things that they're supposed to do, books they're supposed to read, problem sets they're supposed to do. And if they don't do it, that's fine. I mean, that's their choice. I'm there to help them. I'm there to provide the facilities and the resources and the help and whatever I can do to help them. But it's up to them. And I don't think this would be any different. I think that what's interesting about Molly's statement about it being controversial is, of course, it's controversial from our eyes today, right?
Yeah.
Because we're used to a world in which that's no longer required. But if you looked at the, you know, I think if most Harvard students, or it doesn't just Harvard students, I mean, obviously every university, if you look at the data of what's happened to the American body and to people's health now and back in the 60s and the, you know, the 50s and before, most people would be quite alarmed at what's happened. And the fact of the matter is that although we most people, when you ask them, say that they would like to be more physically active, because we know that the vast majority of Americans aren't as physically active as they should be, well more than 50%, depends on which study you look at. But almost all of them say that they would like to be more physically active. And again, I'm an evolutionary biologist, so I'm interested in the reasons for why this is the case.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that part of the reason for this, a large part of the reason is this, is that we never evolved to choose to be physically active. We evolved to have to be physically active. For most of our evolutionary history, we were hunters and gatherers who had to go out every day and walk 5 to 9 kilometers a day. We had to carry things. We had to, you know, everything we made had to be made by hand. There was no Cuisinarts or microwaves or whatever. It was all done by physical power. But those people, you know, our ancestors, were also at the margin of energy balance. They barely had enough energy to do what they needed to do. And any extra energy, you know, you want to devote that towards reproduction, because that's what natural selection cares about. So for most of human history, people had to be active, but they were also selected for to be inactive whenever possible. And so I would argue that it's our biological nature to avoid activity unless we need to do it. And that's why we require physical education in schools. That's why we require, you know, mm-hmm. And so we can't require it of adults, right? Adults have the right to smoke. They have the right to drink. They have the right to be physically inactive. But when you go to college, you sign a commitment contract to have people help you do what you want to do. Because after all, you wouldn't probably read all the books that I assign unless I made you, right? Or at least coerced you in some regard. So I don't think this is any different. I just think it's kind of new thinking and we just need to wrap our heads around it.
All right. Well, I think it's a good thing to wrap our heads around. Dan Lieberman is a professor of biological sciences at Harvard. He's author of the book, The Story of the Human Body, Evolution, Health, and Disease. Dan Lieberman, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
It's been all our pleasure. Thank you. So we heard from Dan. We heard Dan Lieberman mention the benefits of physical activity and the different ways we can make exercise more accessible. And that's precisely the idea behind WBUR's new 21-day podcast, The Magic Pill. It's a daily dose of stories, science tips, and music to make you feel better about exercise. And it's hosted by Dr. Eddie Phillips of Harvard Medical School and Carrie Goldberg, editor of WBUR's Common Health blog. And she joins us now. Carrie, good to have you.
Thanks, Anthony.
So you actually reported on this idea for a physical activity requirement at Harvard recently. Let's start there. Good idea?
Well, I just find Dan Lieberman's argument...
Who's sitting right here,
by the way.
Who's
sitting right here, but I would say this even so. The argument is so powerful that we are so deeply hardwired to avoid exercise. I can feel it in yourself. You can feel this sort of resistance. And so basically, speaking here as a parent, I do think it's a good idea for a college or a university at least to push students in this direction that we know could help them be healthier and happier, maybe not just in college, but for a much longer time.
So, yeah. Well, speaking of that, I think a lot of adults, myself included, wish we had a requirement to get us to do more of what we know is good for us. Exercise, for example.
We think we want it. We kind of don't want it. But yes, I think that it would be helpful. And, you know, that Harvard student I spoke with, Molly Levins, she said she had a really difficult time prioritizing exercise.
It's like the easiest thing to push off because you're like, oh, I'll just exercise tomorrow. And when you're already exhausted, then the last thing you want to do is use more energy up.
So there we are on that margin of energy that Dan was talking about. A lot of us adults are exhausted too, but we may, you know, sort of try to set up something similar, like we pay for a gym or a trainer, or we set up a workout date with a friend so we feel more required to work out. But we're still going against this counterforce that we have all these reasons that we tell ourselves not to exercise, like reasons or excuses. Actually, sometimes it's hard to tell which, but that's the topic of yesterday's Magic Pill episode, actually.
Well, We'll talk about that because I'm really intrigued about this. Reasons that we give ourselves not to exercise. What are some of the excuses we come up with?
Excuses or reasons.
Or
maybe
reasons.
Real reasons.
Yeah.
So by far the biggest one tends to be that we just have no time. And we actually have a whole Magic Pill episode just on the time problem because it's such a tough one. And here's a little excerpt with my co-host, Dr. Eddie Phillips, who's at Harvard Medical School in the Boston VA. I asked him what he tells his patients who simply do not have the time to get to the gym.
The point is your body doesn't actually care that you're in the gym. It doesn't care if you're working out at home. It just knows that you're moving.
And basically something is better than nothing?
Exactly. So what we're talking about is actually sort of splicing in little bits of exercise.
So this is this whole idea of lifestyle exercise, that you work it in, you splice it in bits and pieces wherever you can, even if it's just 5 minutes here or 5 minutes there. Like you park in the back of the parking lot, so it takes you 5 minutes to walk to the store, 5 minutes to walk back, that's 10 minutes right there.
Yeah,
right?
Interesting. Or maybe you don't have time to do a 5 mile run, do a half a mile run. It's still going to be good for you.
Right. Now, it's hard to believe that it could be as good for you as actually going to the gym for a half hour and huffing and puffing and sweating. But Eddie explains that there are kind of two goals. One is the hardcore exercise, but the other is just to break up our sedentary behavior, all of our sitting and lying on the couch. And he says the aim is really to do both.
Carrie, we literally have 5 seconds left.
Yep.
What's next from the Magic Pill?
Well, the main thing is you can sign up for the Magic Pill at wbur.fm/magicpill, and you'll get an email starting at day one. Coming up, we're going to have how you can actually get pleasure from lifting weights. And believe it or not, Anthony, you can feel so much better about how you look naked that you will no longer be scared by the common nightmare where you find yourself in a public place with no clothes on.
All right, that I want to know about. Carrie Goldberg, editor of WBUR's Common Health blog and co-host of WBUR's 21-day podcast, The Magic Pill. That's it for today. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.